Hello and welcome to CRE Corner. I'm your host, David Fuller-Watts. And in this episode, we're talking about the need to have an adult conversation about the shape of retail. We'll talk about how retail real estate fared in the first half of 2024, what we can expect from the rest of the year, and what trends we're seeing in the market. To help me unpick this topic, I'm delighted to be welcomed by Stephen Springham, partner and head of retail research at Knight Frank. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here.
Before we get into the topic in great detail, I'd love to know a bit about your background, how you came to head up the UK market and retail research team at Knight Frank, and what does your role actually involve?
Sure. It's a job I've been doing here at Knight Frank for nearly 10 years now, but it wasn't a direct route to get here. A degree in modern languages, French and German, isn't your typical pathway into property. But from university, I actually became a retail analyst, first and foremost. And I have to say, whisper it, but that's probably still my spiritual home. I worked for Management Horizons and Verdict. And from there, I moved into a retail management consultancy, working for PwC. From there, I went to work for Experian as a retail and retail property consultant. So that's where I really crossed the divide into the property world. And I made the full transition about 18 years ago when I moved to an agency called King Sturge, where I headed up their retail research function before they got taken over by Jones Lang LaSalle in 2012. And as I say, I've been fulfilling the same role at Knight Frank for around the last 10 years. So a long and winding road, but in essence, 32 years in retail, around 20 of which have been in retail property.
And a lot of experience. So fully qualified to talk through this topic, that's for sure.
You be the judge.
So one thing that we are asking all our podcast guests is a question at the start of the episode, because we think we're nice and cool and trendy like that, is what would you say is your favorite commercial building and why?
That's a tough one. The obvious thing for me to do would be to pick out some of the best in class retail assets and shopping centers we have. So if I were to go down that route, I'd be talking about places like Bluewater, to Westfield Schemes, Trafford Center, etc. But that would be a bit obvious, as I say. I'm not going to do that. Globally, I've just booked a holiday to the US. I'd have to say the Empire State Building, probably, with the Chrysler Building a close second. For the reason, obviously skyscrapers have come a long way since they were built, and there are a lot bigger and better ones globally. But the fact that it was built so long ago, back in the 1930s, that's nearly a century ago now, yet still defines the New York skyline the way it does, I think it's absolutely amazing. So it doesn't look dated in any way. And for a building that's nearly 100 years old, I think that's quite a staggering achievement.
I think I appreciate that view. When I lived in the US for a little while, the skylines of the cities are so impressive, and they're definitely taken by the premier buildings. And when you go to the Empire State Building and you see all the pictures of how it was built, it's frightening. Okay, well, fantastic. Let's get into the concept of retail analysis. And from your view and the research that you've done, and I've read some of the papers, in your view, how did retail fare in the first half of this year? I'm particularly interested in shopping centres, of course, but obviously retail real estate is more than just that.
Yeah, my summation would be retail did okay in the first half of the year, but could do a lot better. Obviously, I'll qualify that. If we think, as we broadly do, it's the three key stakeholders really in retail. So consumers, occupiers, and the property world. Consumer market was actually pretty tough in the first half of this year. And that might sound a bit contrarian, because a lot of the narrative goes against that. We're talking about improving consumer sentiment, the fact that, buying power is increasing as inflation recedes. But if you look at the scores on the doors, being retail sales were actually pretty lackluster in the first half of this year. So whatever you've read elsewhere, the consumer is still in a pretty precarious place. So there's a few minor red flags on the consumer side of things. On the occupational side of things, again, I think we think of retailers as being a bit flaky, and we've obviously seen a lot of fallout over the years. But again, I think, those retailers that have survived have fundamentally got their house in order, by which I mean they've right-sized their portfolios. They're not complacent anymore. They're not opening more stores than they need to. So where they are expanding, it's very selective. It's quite painstaking, if I'm honest, but I'd rather that than retailers open far too many stores and it all end in tears. So occupational market is fairly subdued, but you know, that's probably no bad thing. And we haven't seen that much occupier fallout. Obviously, I had Ted Baker this week, and there's a few question marks over Supergroup and Body Shop earlier in the year. So we've had some casualties, but by and large, the sort of level of fallout's been fairly limited in the first half of this year. The third strand, really, the retail property markets. In terms of property market performance, actually, the signs are very encouraging. We are seeing rental growth again after a number of years of rebasing. Capital values are also increasing as well, not just predominantly in retail warehousing, but not exclusively. So, you know, we are seeing a return to capital value growth in shopping centres and high street shops as well, which is, as I say, been a long time coming. So property markets are doing quite nicely. Investment markets, it's been a pretty slow first half of the year, if I'm honest. It wasn't disastrous by any means, but it's a bit slower than we'd have liked. But we are seeing increasing signs of life in investment markets. So while the first half of the year hasn't blown the lights out or anything, the second half of the year should be conceivably or tangibly better, I would say. So yeah, that's the sort of mixed picture across the whole retail spectrum in the first half of the year.
Yeah, it's a good overview. Do you think that there's particular asset classes that have performed better than others, or some, particularly from a kind of occupier space, and maybe quantify that a little bit? But I know a lot of there's a lack of space in the premier destinations for occupiers who want to expand. Do you think that's having an impact on?
Yeah, I think if you think in terms of retail channels, there's a very clear pecking order in terms of performance. So retail warehousing is definitely outperforming in town. The food store market is sort of second in the hierarchy, if you like, followed by sort of high streets and shopping centres. So there is very much a distinct hierarchy between the different retail channels. Within, say, shopping centre market, again, it's a multi-tiered market. Again, people will tend to always focus on definitions of prime, secondary. And again, I'm not personally not a great fan of those, because I think it's a very subjective thing. I much rather talk in terms of good and bad, really, and the shades of grey in between. So yeah, the very best shopping centres, there is high demand for space, that there's a degree of vacancy across every scheme, but it tends to be lower in some of the better schemes. But then obviously it's very hard to generalize about shopping centers, because it really does vary. And I think it's, you know, one of the sort of the overarching ongoing structural failings of retail is oversupply. And there's no denying the fact that in some towns and cities across the country, we have far too much retail floor space, and not all of it can prosper. So it is very location specific, rather than, yeah, we can't just generalize and say it's the biggest cities where everything's doing well, or the sort of secondary ones where it isn't. I think it's a lot more nuanced than that.
Yeah, it makes sense. And on the basis of the timing of the recording of this podcast, we in the UK have just been through a general election. Do you think that's going to lead to a retail revival? You mentioned customer confidence and investor confidence previously.
Yeah, again, I think if you're taking a step back from retail and thinking about all commercial real estate, the one thing we're craving is stability. So hopefully, obviously, the big hope is that a new government will bring that. Although the announcement that the autumn budget's going to have some very nasty stings in the tail probably didn't do too much for positive sentiment when it was made the other day. Again, I'm not sure a change of government's necessarily going to bring about a retail revival in itself. That said, we are genuine believers in the fact that there is a retail revival. When we actually put out a full research report at the tail end of last year, we went with the title of a retail renaissance, actually. I genuinely believe we're at a massive inflection point within retail. I'm not blind to the fact that we still face huge challenges. In fact, back in 2018, we did a warts and all report called the Price of Change, which identified 10 structural failings. So I'm not saying that all of these structural failings have been resolved or necessarily gone away, but they have been addressed to some degree one way or another. And actually, in the Retail Renaissance report, we actually appraised the level of progress that have been made against all those structural failings. So we're not out of the woods. We're not back to the good old days, but we're certainly in a better place than we were. A lot of work to do. I suppose the note of caution is, yes, we're coming off, the caveat is we're coming off massive rebasement here. So it's not a good case of going back to where we were or going back to the good old days. The world's changed, the world's moved on. But I think those that talked about retail being in terminal decline were very wrong. In fact, just to throw one stat out there, in terms of performance this year, we think retail is going to be the best performing of all the commercial real estate classes, with a total return about somewhere between 8 and 8.5%. So yeah, that's going to be better than offices. That's going to be better than industrial. So it's been a long journey. It's been a long, painful journey, but I think we're on much firmer footing than we have been in years, really.
Yeah, I think that's something that is a view shared by lots of experts that we talk to. And it's always interesting for me when you think about how much change has really happened over the last probably 2 years, and maybe even a little bit longer than that, is when you look forward now and you look to try and understand around the retail revival or the recovery, what are the data points that you really look at? Because I'm sure there's multiples of those. And how do you start to benchmark that?
The thing really is to go back to all the component parts of the market or the stakeholders within the market and see where the wish is or the holy grail is for all those stars to align. So we'd want consumer markets to be ticking along nicely, occupier markets to be not just surviving, but actually thriving, and property markets to be sort of reaping the benefit of that. And obviously that to flow through to investment or performance, investment and volumes and pricing. That's the holy grail, a bit of a long wish list there, but they're the sort of various benchmarks that we've got in our minds. So yeah, we'd want retail sales to be better than they have been in the first half of this year. They were very erratic. And again, last month's figures were okay, but they only looked good because the previous month was so bad. So we want more of a consistent pattern there. And again, I think there is a risk that we're looking at the narrative and looking at consumer confidence, looking at footfall, looking at sort of metrics around affordability and purchasing power, and actually not looking at the where the scores are on the doors, which is the retail sales figures. And again, like to see a bit more consistency, a bit more of a discernible pattern there, which at the moment really isn't there, if I'm honest. Obviously, occupational markets, we don't want to see any more fallout. We probably will, is the honest answer. Because we always do. I think that's just the nature of retailing. But obviously, the less of that, the better. Property performance, as I said already, is property market performance is on the up, both in terms of rents and capital values and total returns. So that part of the retail ecosystem is ticking along nicely. And yes, we're anticipating a recovery in the investment side of things in the second half of this year. I just hope we walk on that rather than run too quickly, because as I say, the stars really need to align across the board, and sentiment may improve because interest rates probably will, almost definitely will come down more before the year end. I would hope that doesn't flip sentiment on its head and people go mad and get their fingers burnt all over again. I would hope we would see a measured return to positivity in investment markets rather than the floodgates opening. So that's kind of the wish list, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point around the interest rates and the market getting too carried away. But I always think a really interesting point is what you made earlier about the occupancy and occupier survival. Obviously, there's a big push in the second half of this year up until the real key trading points that kick in. And Christmas seems to be getting earlier and earlier from a retail world. I think there was even a news article the other day around Christmas stock coming into shops before even Halloween stock coming in. So we're obviously on this big push now towards the end of the year. We will really see, I think, probably in January and February, which retailers have managed to survive that period and are going to move forward. But when we think about this period now between the second half of the year and this push into Christmas, in your opinion, what critical hurdles need to be overcome within commercial real estate, and particularly with the landlord and tenants and the work that they do together to create that really good positive experience to encourage the consumer spending to come into physical properties? And how do we really get that momentum going into 2025?
One of my stock phrases is retailing is for life. It's not just for Christmas, because again, I think people tend to put a little bit too much emphasis on Christmas and think it's the be all and end all, when obviously retailing doesn't begin and start in October. It's an all year round thing. Likewise, you're absolutely right. Christmas does come earlier and earlier, but I haven't been down there, but Selfridges normally put out their Christmas, open their Christmas department about this time of year. And I'd be surprised if they haven't done a similar thing. But in terms of tenants planning for Christmas, that planning starts way, way back in January. The moment Christmas is over last year, they've actually got a plan for this year. A key facet of that is actually buying. So actually sourcing stock again, people, when we look at Christmas, when we look at Christmas trading, everyone's always looking at the sort of top line figures. If they're delving a bit deeper, they'll look at profit figures. But the third moving part really is how under or overstocked retailers are. So this is always a key one for the outcome of Christmas, if you like. So the ones that are left licking their wounds are the ones that overbought, really bought too much stock in. But again, I think given that, you know, market conditions back in January when retailers were buying in stock, they weren't in massively complacent mode. So I would think that particular pitfall could largely be avoided this time around. But again, it's all about execution. It's getting the right stock, getting the right amount of stock, getting the right presentation, getting the advertising to support that. Again, I think in recent years, you know, particularly John Lewis, they go overboard on the Christmas advert and basically take their eye off the ball a little bit of the other things. It's not much good having a magical Christmas campaign if all the other elements aren't really falling into line. And again, it's about doing the basics brilliantly. That's true of any time of year, not just Christmas. And again, I suppose I'm singling out John Lewis here because that's why they've come unstuck in recent years. They've actually not done the basics brilliantly. They've sort of not invested in their stores properly. Their staffing levels aren't where they should be. Product is a bit hit and miss. If you're failing on those basic things, it doesn't matter how good your Christmas TV campaign is, you're going to get found out. So yeah, it's about doing all of those things and doing them brilliantly, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think keep the simple and doing the basics right is always a really important thing. If you've got, even from a landlord perspective, you want to make sure that the shopper's experience is something that they want to come back and experience again and again, because shopping can be stressful, but especially when the property is busy, which is what we want. So we want more people to come in. And if in that case, we obviously need to make sure that the experience is great. And that falls into a lot of work around property management and managing security and managing operations and working closely with the retailers to make sure that we can advertise and work closely with marketing. So there's a lot of work that goes on in the retail real estate world to help support those retailers through that period. But there's still always that kind of elephant in the room of online sales versus brick and mortar. Do you think there's still work to be done that can help those two to optimize the physical experience within retail?
I think we've come a long way on the online versus physical store narrative. Again, a few years ago, people were obsessed with the numbers. Online penetration figures exist. But again, I'm not sure as a currency whether they actually carry that much weight these days, because obviously a lot of online sales is multi-channel. So it's physical retailers, it's your John Lewis's, it's your M&S, it's your Tesco's, it's your Next's. Is their online part of the business? So again, this sort of taking the numbers at face value, I think, is a bit dangerous. I said we've come a long way. I think COVID was a bit of a blip when the narrative went backwards and it was basically everything's online and online penetration goes up to X percent, 36%, whatever it went up to. And everyone was saying it was just going to kick on from there. This was the beginning of the end. And again, proves how short-sighted that sort of line of thought was. Obviously, stores have reopened post-COVID. There was a massive bounce back, which was an inevitability. But since the post-bounce back, patterns have been very erratic with online. It hasn't exactly been growing at the same trajectory it was before. So I think we're at a bit of an inflection point there. But specifically for the multi-channel retailers, I think maybe 5 or 6 years ago, they were under investing in their stores and investing everything into online. Whereas now I think they've got a bit more of a pragmatic view. They realize that you can't pull all your eggs into one basket. So I think they're actually looking at the way stores and online sort of interact. And it'll always be a learning curve. It'll always be a journey. But I think you have a much better understanding of the symbiotic relationship between the two. So again, it was always like, oh, do I need a store if all the sales are going online? Whereas I think the thinking now is, well, actually, the store is an important cog within the online ecosystem. Without the store, those online sales wouldn't be made, because you've built your brand in that particular area. It's convenient in terms of click and collect. The two channels work in harmony. So I think retailers have certainly reappraised where the store fits within that and are realizing that actually you do need to invest in your physical estate as much as you do your online presence. So as I say, we've come a long way, but I think we've still got a long way to go. But direction of travel is largely positive.
Yeah, and I think leisure has probably had a bit to play in that as well. We've obviously talked quite a lot about retail. Consumers are still going to have experiences. They still want to go to the shows and things. How have you seen that kind of compare to the retail world in terms of consumer spending and whether that's having an impact?
Yeah, again, I think there were big question marks. One during COVID, and then two post COVID, when we've supposedly been in a cost of living crisis. I suppose economic logic would dictate that, you know, leisure is very discretionary. So if anything has to give, it's going to be very vulnerable. That's kind of the economic logic, but not really what we're seeing on the ground. People are still going out and have reprioritized what they spend their money on. So again, I think leisure spend has been a lot more resilient than most people would have expected. What that means on the ground, obviously retail has been through the mill. Obviously vacancy rates have risen pretty dramatically in recent years. Obviously they're a lot more stable now. And leisure is seen as the sort of solution to a lot of these empty or these void units. Again, I think it's kind of accelerated a trend we were seeing anyway, which was, you know, leisure and retail working hand in hand or working more closely than they had previously. And if you think about a shopping centre, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, leisure was a bit of an afterthought, really. It was a food court on the sort of top floor or bottom floor, which was sort of did a job, but wasn't really considered an equal partner in the overall proposition, if you like. Whereas now, I think shopping centre owners and landlords are certainly increasing or giving leisure a much higher billing, not just by default, but because they realise that it's all part of the same experience. So yes, it is a direction of travel we're going to see a lot more of. And again, leisure market, the food and beverage, the F&B side of it, slightly worried because obviously there's a lot of private equity in that market. So there's a lot of players, there's a lot of operators that may or may not go the distance. So again, we've talked about retailer fallout, but I'm slightly concerned we'll see some of the less fit F&B operators meet their maker in the coming years, but hopefully not too many. But I think it'd be remiss of us to not have that on our radar.
Let me just shift gears a second, because one of the topics that I'm quite passionate about myself, actually, is what can we do about small retail crime? And it seems to be a virus that's spreading through the UK at the moment. It's seemingly uncontrollable. But I'd love to know your thoughts on that, what you're seeing in terms of some of the conversations and insight that's being driven on that topic.
Yeah, I think virus is a very good word. It's a proper epidemic out there, and blame social media or whatever. As I've said already, I've been up and down the country, and everywhere I go, I'm seeing people shoplifting and getting away with it and not a lot being done about it. Again, that's the sort of anecdotal thing I've seen from my side. But again, speaking to retailers, we hold lunches with a lot of leading retailers in-house, and the conversation the other week was all about this very subject. And they were very dismissive of the fact that there's anything they can do about it. Yes, they can increase security, but they can't really enforce anything. I think the law, I'm happy to be corrected on this, but I think if it's less than £200 in stolen goods, there's nothing they can do in terms of trying to apprehend anybody that's doing it or anything. And of course, the perpetrators know that. So they're in hiding to nothing. So nothing about walking into a store and walking out with a full bag or whatever. It's pretty blatant.
Are any conversations happening in the retailer world around the shared responsibility from landlords and retailers?
Well, they're quite resigned, really, in all honesty. I won't name names, but some of these sort of major high street retailers, they were saying what does happen if in a shopping centre they do arrest someone for shoplifting or whatever. Normally, they just hold them. There's a certain place in the management suite of the shopping centre that they will be held, and then the police arrive, and normally they're given a cup of tea and lift home. It's their words. That's not me making it up. So there is no sort of deterrent at the moment. So yeah, until the law changes. Again, we mentioned the new Labour government. They did sort of, in their manifesto, I believe, make some sort of reference to the fact that there'll be specific crimes against abuse of staff or whatever. But I'm not aware that extends to basic theft, which is what it is and needs to be called out. So I agree with you. It's an absolute virus. And I think industry bodies, things like the British Retail Consortium, should be a lot more vociferous about it than maybe they have been, because it is a real problem. I mean, just to finish off the anecdotes, really, one of the high street retailers I won't mention, but they actually quantified it. They said they lost £16 million through shoplifting in London alone in a year, which is staggering. They are a major high street retailer, but that is just in one city. Okay, it's London, but you know, multiply that out across the country, we're talking millions and billions of pounds. It is, as you say, a real virus.
Yeah, I do think it's something we probably could have a whole episode about, to be honest. As I say, we put a lot of content out about it. I think there's much more we can do in terms of building networks to help support each other in cities in particular and within retails. Often the retailers will hear that something's happening from their colleagues in other places, in other shops. And so we can be a bit more prepared. But again, I think Okay, we could probably have a whole nother hour-long conversation about that, Stephen. So let's finish this conversation off and finish this episode off with one of my favourite topics, which is, of course, sustainability. And I would love to know how you think, and in your team and the research that you do, how asset and portfolio owners are aspiring to meet sustainability goals, and how do they balance the sustainability measures with, of course, their commercial goals, which has been pretty tough over the last 12 months.
Yeah, retail relative to other commercial real estate sectors, retail is a bit of a laggard, really, if I'm honest. I think because obviously, you could argue it's had more to think about, more to worry about. So maybe ESG or sustainability has been sort of relegated down the agenda, wrongly, obviously, but you can see that's the order of things. Some of the stats are pretty frightening. I mean, if you look at MEES certifications, 4.5% of all retail stock in this country is unlettable at the moment. It's grade F and G. If the sort of targets are implemented, that figure suggests that figure is going to rise to 38.5% by 2027, 73.4% by 2030. So these are pretty alarming numbers. I think the reality is the bandings aren't going to move quite as quickly as proposed. But that said, it still highlights a real problem. And I think the underlying problem is not just the numbers, really. I think it's the mindset whereby sort of the operators think it's a landlord's problem. The landlords think it's a retailer's problem. So both are passing the buck and nothing really is going to get done about it. Where retail assets are compliant, are sustainable, they tend to be new builds. So a lot more food stores, people like IKEA and everything, because the new builds, how you retrofit to increase your certification is a bone of contention. So yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. But on the sort of the ESG thing, again, the E always dominates the narrative. But I think really the S is where retail plays best. I mean, retail is the hub of communities. It is the second largest employer in the UK. 30% of the UK's jobs are in retail. I think only the public sector has got a higher contribution to the UK workforce. So again, I think there's an overriding tendency to focus on the E, whereas the S is possibly where retail can make a more positive contribution. But again, it's always hard to quantify. My final point, really, I suppose, on the ESG side, again, I think everyone always thinks in terms of cost. If you're going to make your stores compliant with ESG benchmarks and KPIs, it's going to cost you money. But again, I think the smarter retailers, to call out a few, the German discounters, Aldi and Lidl, someone like IKEA as well, they're actually achieving a virtuous circle of using, you know, ESG as a cost-saving mechanism so they can actually monetize implementing ESG measures. So again, I'm not saying that's easy. This mindset of it being always a cost is perhaps the wrong starting point. And those retailers that have, to be fair, been doing it for longer and have learned probably most along the way are the ones that are actually achieving the holy grail of making it a bit of a win situation. And again, I think that takes a bit of a shift in mindset, but is ultimately what the retail sector's got to aspire to.
Yeah, it's building it as part of their business model is the way to go, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of greenwashing that there always will be, and retailers' claims and what they do is, I always take them a bit of a pinch of salt. But yeah, the really savvy ones are the ones that are making it work for them rather than just ticking a box.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. It's been really interesting listening to your thoughts here, and we'll certainly catch up again soon. As I said, I think we could probably have a whole episode just on retail crime and just on sustainability.
Absolutely.
In real estate and retail in particular. So no, we really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And thanks everyone for listening and tuning in, and catch you next time.